You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Episode number 28 of That One Time on Tour is brought to you by Sticker Wolf. Sticker Wolf, they do stickers for a living. Orlando, Florida-based Sticker Wolf prints full color and uses a heavyweight vinyl that sticks to nearly every surface imaginable. They also laminate with a 5 to 7 year UV over laminate for the best protection available. Thicker, longer lasting, more durable, and more affordable than the competition. Make sure to check out stickerwolf.com.
Hey, this is Randy from Pennywise, and you are listening to That One Time on Tour.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.
Run for the road, cause it's going on and on. We'll be driving through the dark.
Hello and welcome to episode number 28 of That One Time on Tour. As always, I'm your host, Chris Swinney, back with another stellar conversation with someone in or around the music industry. If you cannot tell, I'm a little under the weather. I have quite the cold right now, so I'm going to get through this intro. I'm wheezing and everything all over the microphone. So, last week was amazing. The episode with Eddie from Thrice blew up. We hit number 85 on the iTunes charts, and the podcast as a whole hit number 127. So thank you guys so much for the support. This week, I get to talk to Randy Bradbury, bass player for Pennywise. Pennywise is one of my favorite bands of all time. Been listening to him since high school, so I geeked out a little bit and fanboyed out with Randy. But you're going to have to wait to hear that, because I have to tell you about some really cool sponsors to the show. Now first, I'm going to tell you about a sponsor from last week's show, actually, that I wanted to really drive home because I really enjoy what this guy does. My buddy Marco has this podcast called Zealous Musician, and it's basically a dissection of a band's songs or music per episode. They do light music theory. They talk about everything that goes into the band. It's like a real obsession, like geek out kind of thing over a band. And they've done Thrice and Taking Back Sunday and Copeland. But go to zealousmusician.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and search for Zealous Musician. You're going to love it. It's a great podcast. I can't get enough of it. So shout out to Marco and check it out, guys. So also, we've got Merge 4. Merge 4 is a company that makes something really cool. They make socks. They have collaborations with artists. They have collaborations with professional skateboarders and musicians and all kinds of stuff. I'm wearing my Sublime socks right now. I have Circle Jerk socks. I have Wee Man socks. I have all kinds of cool stuff that they sent me. They sent me a little grab bag. So make sure to check out Merge 4. You can go to merge4.com or just search Merge4 on any of the social media platforms. Rockabilia.com. I love this company. 500,000 unique items officially licensed by the band. They have everything you need for October. They've got costumes. They have like Eddie masks from Iron Maiden. They have every spooky band shirt that you could ever imagine. They've got AFI. They've got Bauhaus, Danzig, Misfits, anything that you want, they've got it. So go to rockabilia.com, put in the promo code PCTOTOT at checkout, and you're going to save 15%. And tell them that Chris sent you over there. They're great people. Frankie, shout out to you, man. Thanks a lot. That's really all the business. I do have some personal stuff I want to get out of the way. You guys need to go see my old bandmates, the Ataris. They're on tour starting Thursday in Minneapolis, and they're doing So Long Astoria, the big record. They're playing the whole thing, and I'm sure they're doing other stuff as well. But it's kind of like the anniversary of that record. You know, I think it's 15 years. I'm stupid. I'm tired, and I don't feel well. So yeah, go see the Ataris. You can check them out on Facebook or anywhere else. All the tour dates are posted. I just know that it starts Thursday in Minneapolis. So check them out on the road. Shout out to Chris and all the guys in the Ataris. Chris with a K. I'm Chris with a C. And that's it. This has been a really long ramble, but I'm on NyQuil and I'm not feeling that great. So I'm going to give you guys everything. I'm not even going to edit this. It's just going to be really bad. So I hope you guys are following us on all of the social media platforms. It's TOTOT Podcast. If you want to be a sponsor or get in touch with me for some reason, it's TOTOTPodcast@gmail.com. Please give me a call on the TOTOT hotline. It is 1-765-372-8818. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, and that's it. I am going to go into a coughing fit if I don't tell you guys to get into this conversation right now. So here we go. This is me and Randy Bradbury from Pennywise, and here it is, my conversation. Thanks a lot, guys. I am delirious. Okay, so I'm on the line with Randy from Pennywise. How you doing today, Randy?
I'm good. How you doing, Chris? Thanks for asking me to be on.
I really appreciate you coming on, man. It's a big honor for me. I've been a big fan of Pennywise for most of my life, actually. I got into you guys right at my freshman year in high school.
Awesome. When was that?
I graduated in 97, so let's see, I guess 93, yeah. I think is when Unknown Road, I think, was the first record I got.
Yeah, that was the first one I played on too. So,
oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tell my friends this all the time, and I've actually talked about it on the podcast. When I was young, you know, I grew up in Indiana, so we got things a little bit later than everybody else. The way that I found out about bands was through my bands. I liked the t-shirts they wore. And I remember seeing an Offspring video. Then I think it was Noodles or Dexter was wearing a Pennywise shirt. So I went out the next day and bought that record.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. You know, back before the internet, you had to rely on things like that. You know, I got into bands because bands I liked would do a cover of them or mention them in an interview that you'd find in a fanzine or something. So yeah, you had to be kind of, crafty to figure out what bands that you might like.
I mean, that's how I got into the Misfits. I've told the story a million times on the podcast, but, you know, Cliff Burton from Metallica had a Misfits shirt on, and so I went out and bought that record.
Yep. Yeah, that's how it works. I mean, I got turned on to the MC5 because the Damned did Looking At You. They did, you know, did MC5 covers, and on a live album, Captain Sensible's ranting about how great the MC5 were. So yeah, it was just things like that. It was really, it was kind of more natural. There was something cool about having to really do a lot of research and be dedicated in order to find cool music. You know, it was like special. It was your secret. And it really felt like you kind of owned it a little bit. Nowadays, I mean, I can't really talk about it nowadays, but what I know, there's so many bands that are so accessible and so easy to check out on the internet that I can't even do it. I don't even know where to start. You know,
I think people take it for granted a little bit too, because, you know, like you were saying, when it was a little bit more special and you had to seek things out and they became your little secret. Nowadays, yeah, it's so at your fingertips. No one really cares, I don't think.
Right. Yeah.
So what I want to do, this is a podcast about touring and everything else that goes into being in a band, but I would like to, you probably don't remember me. We only talked a couple of times in person, but back in 2004, when you guys were doing your Canadian tour, I was touring with a band called The Reason. We were opening up, and Murphy's Law was on the tour.
Okay.
And Jason from 98 Mute actually played for Fletcher because he didn't make it across the border. Do you remember that?
Right. Did he? Well, I remember. See, I have selective, like my memory is like Swiss cheese. I remember something so great. And then there's holes all over the place. But I know Jason filled in when we went to Europe. And then when we were going back and forth on the text, I was trying to, man, jog my memory about being up in Canada with Jason. And I can't remember it.
It was a very short tour. Like, I think you guys were only playing like a few shows in Ontario and maybe a few shows in Alberta. And I was with this Canadian band at the time, and I think maybe Big Wig may have played a couple of the shows as well, because we were touring with Big Wig. And I just remember the first day that we got to the tour, I think it was somewhere in Toronto, maybe the Opera House or somewhere, the Fletcher wasn't there and Jason was there, and you guys had told me the story that I guess he had a prior like marijuana thing or something on his record, he didn't make it across.
Fletcher had everything crazy involves Fletcher some way. I don't think there would be a marijuana thing necessarily, but there would have probably been about 30 other things. That, you know, he's had to jump through hoops to get into Canada. It's funny. That's the hardest place to get into.
Yeah. It's insane
in the world. Yeah. So,
well, I just wanted to bring that up. If you don't remember much about it, it's cool. It was a big deal for me because I was touring with this little band in Canada, and all of a sudden the manager's like, hey, you guys are going to play four shows with Pennywise, and we like freaked out. So it was great, man.
No, that's awesome. I mean, a lot of times people will come up and say, do you remember me? I went to your show. Honestly, like I went to your show in, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'll be like, oh yeah, you were the third guy back in the pit standing there. But I usually remember faces really good. So, but I'm horrible with names and I got gaps in my memory, you know. So,
well, and like during Warped Tour a couple of times when I was with the Ataris and whatnot, like I know you and I had a couple words, but we never got super close or anything. So I don't take offense to any of it. So I just thank you so much for being on the show, though.
Well, I just, you know, I'm just shocked at myself because you seem like a nice guy. I should have hung out with you more.
Well, maybe in the future we can hang out, man. Grab a beer or something.
Okay. Right. Well, I haven't been drinking for a year and a half, but we can.
Well, you know what? I just said that to be polite because I don't really drink much either. Maybe we can get a soda or something.
That's the thing to say. Right. We'll get sodas.
Okay. Sounds we'll get good. Sodas and hang out, man. So what I want you to do, I want you to take me back to, you know, the first time that you felt like music was something that spoke to you. I'm talking like it could be junior high, elementary school, whatever. What was the first like memory where you're like, wow, I really like music?
That's cool. That's a good question. It's been the driving force in my life for, you know, a lot of times it's been like, you know, I don't know, the wind in my sails. Right. So I could go back. If you want to go all the way back, I'll take it to the part that's relevant, but I will go all the way back for a minute. My mom, I apparently played classical music for me when I was a baby in the crib.
Wow.
And it's weird. I talk about like having a Swiss cheese memory. I remember that. I remember being in the crib and hearing music, and I just think it completely kind of wired my brain to love like music and harmony and stuff like that. And I remember, and then, you know, as time went on, I mean, I always loved to listen to music. I can remember growing up in the late 60s and early 70s and hearing all the music that, you know, would be playing in the car and the AM radio. I remember getting an AM radio when I was, I don't know, maybe 5-6 years old, and I would listen to it before I went to bed at night. I remember even summer, you know, I played a lot, but I remember sometimes I'd just go sit in my room and listen to music, even though everyone's out doing their thing. So I really loved it. But, you know, and then I got, as time went on, you know, I was a little surfer kid, I guess, and had a brush in my back pocket and kind of long hair in the late 70s. And, you know, I was into Zeppelin and Ted Nugent and Black Sabbath and, you know, stuff like that, and then I'd heard about punk rock a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just hear a little bit of things and you're like, oh, that's stupid. You know, I wouldn't be into that, you know? Yeah. And then bands like The Knack and The Police and The Pretenders and stuff like that broke like right around when I was in ninth grade, I think. And they seemed really good. And I remember drawing checkers on my my topsiders, or I didn't have Vans, you know, was something, but I don't even know what that was, but I know I liked that, but still for some reason decided I didn't like punk rock.
Yeah.
So we were kind of, I wasn't going to get into it. And then there was so then right around that time, I got into 10th grade, and there was like, I don't know, there was a handful of punkers, and it was starting, it wasn't very much. It was like, I'm a handful, I mean like four or five, and they were like freaks, you know, that their social time in high school was just, was destroyed by that, right? And so you'd look at them, and you'd go like, but, you know, like, wow, you know, what's that all about? You knew it was a thing, though. So I remember going to, so this is the part where like music really actually changed my whole life.
Okay.
I remember going to, we went to, it was November of 1979. Yeah, it was 1979 because I was in 10th grade, and I went to the swap meet with my buddy. And we found bootlegs. You used to have bootlegs all the time. And I liked Elvis Costello then. So I found an Elvis Costello bootleg I wanted to get. And my friend, and then we were looking around, and my friend picked out a Devo one. He was kind of, he was funny guy, man. He was like, he'd make everything funny. And we're like, Devo, let's take this back and listen to it and make fun of it and laugh. And, you know, it'll be fun. It'll be funny. It was, and dude, I swear to God, we put on the Devo record, and I was like, wait a, what is this? This is, wait a minute. This is awesome. And pretty much fell in love. Like within 30 seconds. And I, it was weird. I go, I'm punk rock. I'm going to just be punk rock.
So you guys were going to like goof on it, and it ended up being really awesome, right?
Yes. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And that was it. And from that moment forward, I did what you do and what you were doing with the t-shirts and trying to research and find more bands. And I would just scour. I would go to record stores and look for all, every band. I mean, I would just find imports from everywhere, like, you know, Generation X, the Buzzcocks. I mean, you name it, go on and on and on, all those bands. And I just stopped. I didn't want to surf anymore. I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to listen to, you know, any like rock music, even though I couldn't give up Sabbath. I was, yeah. I kept them secret, guilty pleasure. But yeah, and I wasn't ready to cut my hair right away because I still, you know, like I think I was like 15 and I wanted to, I didn't know how I would ever get chicks if I cut my hair off and become a punk rocker.
Yeah.
So that took a few more months, but eventually just threw, you know, decided to throw my social life away too, which is funny because it ended up that all the guys and a handful of our friends, you know, all decided to do that. And we got shit just like you hear, you know, the stories. And, but then we had our own scene, our own crew and our own like thing that we were part of. And it really felt amazing to just, you know, it was just perfect timing to be that age and to have all that incredible music. Because a lot of those English bands, especially they were top notch. They had top notch production, top notch songwriting. It was really good, kind of like pop crafted songs. Actually, you know, even though that's at the time, it seems so different and out there. Yeah. So that was it, and I was just hooked. And then it got so into it. And then,
Were you playing guitar or bass or anything yet, or is that later on?
No, we had acoustic. I had an uncle. Well, he was actually my cousin, but he was really close with my father, his first cousin. And they even lived together, grew up together as kids. And so he was Uncle Denny, right? And this guy was just a rad dude. He lived in Europe during the late 60s. And he told me, you know, he knew musicians. He hung out with the Animals and was like, he just had all these different, you know, Denny Lane from Wings and all these guys that he knew. And they said he would take acid every day, you know, back then. And he's just a rad dude. And so he had guitars at our house, and I would listen to him play, and I would try to play them. And I even had him try to show me how to play, or a neighbor or something like that, but I couldn't do it. It hurt my finger. So I was like, I'm never going to play guitar. Until yeah, later, shortly after all this punk rock, when my best friends who I ended up being in the Falling Idols with, but they had a band, a backyard party band called Red Alert. And the guitar player Trey, he's really soft spoken. Like, he didn't brag, but he was super talented, and you never knew it. Cause he was the best musician. He was like the funniest dude, but if you didn't pay attention to him, he wasn't going to stand in the middle of the room and tell you about it.
Yeah.
So, but he was the one that showed me like a 2-finger guitar chord.
Oh, like a power chord kind of thing?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. 2-finger power chord. And I was like, and this was at that point, I think it was like, we were in 11th grade then. So it was almost a year later, but things went pretty quick. I don't even think it was a whole year. And I go, what? That's it? That's the magic? I mean, to me, yeah. it was unfathomable. Music was just seemed like daunting and magic, you know? It was I might as well learn how to speak Cantonese, you know? So, so that was it. I'm like, that's it. Just those 2 fingers. So I went home that night, and I don't think I came out of my room for 2 years. I just played guitar.
That's awesome, man.
Exaggerating. Yeah, so that was it. I played, and I wanted to be in a band so I could go play. I just played backyard parties or something. And then I was like, I always loved bass. For some reason, like when I'd listen to Sabbath, I would turn the treble all the way on my tuner. I would turn the treble all the way down and the bass all the way up. And I was just into that.
Well, I mean, Geezer Butler is pretty insane on the bass as well on those records.
So amazing. Yeah. So just amazing. So, I was into that. And I thought, and then it all made sense. I loved bass. And then I thought also that I couldn't, for some reason, my standards for how good you have to be as a guitar player to be in a band seemed really high. So I was like, I'll just get a bass and then I could get in a band. So I went and put a down payment on a bass guitar at Whitaker Music. I had to take the bus, I think, to get up there. I don't know what I did. Rode my bike 5 miles. I don't know what the hell, but, and I would go back every week and put down money, and then I got a bass, and then I just kept practicing, and I started getting in bands, and boom, one after the other, I, played along with records that I liked, and I really, when I get into something, I really, really do it. I want to be good at it. I'm a perfectionist, so not that I'm the best bass player anymore, but at that time, it was like I was a big fish in a little pond, there wasn't that many guys playing bass in bands, backyard party bands, and I happened to like kind of rise to the heap,
So you had mentioned before, I mean, I know you joined officially in 96, joined Pennywise, but you mentioned before, like when we were off the record, we were chatting a little bit, that the first record you played on was Unknown Road. How did that come about? Were you friendly with the guys already?
Okay, so that was, so this band that I mentioned, Falling Idols.
Yeah.
Was a band that in high school or just out of high school was Dave Quackenbush was the singer.
Wow.
And he's the singer of the Vandals. So it was me, Dave Quackenbush, my friend Trey, who was in other bands with like the guys from Sublime, called Short Bus, and he was in Dub All Stars for a minute and
awesome.
Things like that. And then our friend Mud, who's just a rad dude, live in Belmont Shore. He's in all, so these were my bros. So I stayed friends with them forever. And I kind of rose to the top of the heap in our little scene, and I just kept playing and I kept playing, and I would get other offers to be in different bands, and I started getting a little bit of a name or a reputation in Long Beach. And then I got a chance to play with Jack Grisham from TSOL in a band that he had going after TSOL called Tender Fury.
Okay, so
I was playing with him, and this guy Christian would always come to shows and just pretty much destroy. I mean, he was just raddest dude, would talk to me, and he was super cool. But he was a gnarly dude. He would like destroy. He'd get in the pit like and be all bloody and stuff like that. And it turned out that that was actually Fletcher's brother.
Okay.
So I knew Christian, and he would even tell me, you should go see my brother's band. This is back in the early, early days before they did anything. And I was like, man, I would think in my head, I'm like, it can't be good because you're too gnarly. It can't be anything I'd be into. Right. So I didn't go, but anyway, so I kept in, I was friends with Christian, and we kept in touch. And when Pennywise had put out their first first record,
The one on Theologian
the one after that, the one on Epitaph.
Okay.
Okay. Then they were going to go to Europe, it was around that time. It was right before, I think it was after they had already put it out. They were going to go to Europe, and Jim wasn't going to go. So they wanted to get a hold of Dave. So Christian called me to get to arrange Dave to be to go to Europe with Pennywise. So I went to sing
in place of Jim.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I went with Dave to go meet Fletcher. And that's how I first met Fletcher. And so Dave went to Europe with Pennywise and then came back from tour. And then he was going to go back to the Vandals. And then Jason actually came to me at a Vandal show at the Whiskey in 1991, I think it was, or 92, maybe, I don't know, and asked me if I wanted to play bass in Pennywise and he was going to sing. So we did that for almost a year. We played probably a handful of shows, like 7 or 8, 9 shows in California. We would play their first record from start to finish on our sets. And I loved them. I had, when I finally did hear the band, I put on the CD and it was like, it was almost that same feeling as when I heard Devo for the first time. I really, really liked it because
that's awesome.
Bad Religion was my favorite band at the time. And I mean, you know, Suffer, No Control, Against the Grain. And, so I loved that Pennywise record. And, when I got the chance to, you know, go play with them, I was like all in. So at that, during that time, we were working on songs for Unknown Road.
Okay.
And yeah. And so then, we went into the studio to go record Unknown Road and we recorded it at West Beach and I played bass on it. And then when it came time for Jason to sing, Jason was great. great at creating melodies. He sang well, but it just didn't sound the same.
Yeah.
You know, so then Jim came back and sang on that record. And then I went back to doing what I was doing. And we kept in touch. And then, yeah, it was actually not 96, but in 95, they were on tour in October. It was actually October 23rd of 1995. I got a phone call and saying that, hey, we need you to fly out on tour, blah, blah, blah. Jason's going to go back and take some time off and get his act together, which unfortunately, you know how that ended up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's how that all came together.
So when they formally asked you to join, I mean, you were actually playing what I read on the internet, and I know some of this might not be true, but yeah, like Jason wanted to go to rehab to get his alcoholism under control, and you were going to play bass, and then when he came back, you were going to be rhythm guitar. Is that true?
Yeah, these guys are, they love Jason. They grew, you know, I mean, and he was such a huge part of the band. I mean, when you listen to that first record, he has such a unique style. I think it was the thing that his songwriting, you know, and the way he would phrase words, and he was just so, he was really, you know, the heart of the band. So they never wanted to get rid of him ever. But yeah, at the same time, I had been involved a bunch now and seemed to fit. And so, yeah, that was basically what they didn't say that to me. We didn't really talk about it. I was just there playing and they were like, well, we got to see what happens with Jason and stuff like that. So that idea of me being switched to rhythm guitar was something that they had probably, you know, spoke about,
yeah,
you know, amongst themselves, you know. So there was not really a plan in place. We were just kind of going, you know, taking one, you know, putting one foot in front of the other. So since then Fletcher's told me that was the plan.
So when Jason passed away and you found out you're going to be in the band full time, I know it was very sad. I mean, me personally, you know, as a senior in high school, junior in high school, I bought the tribute shirt with the Brohim lyrics on the back and had Jason on the front. Like, I mean, as a kid that had no tie to anything other than liking punk rock, it was a very, very sad time. I know me and all my friends were just kind of, you guys were our favorite band. I mean, we skateboarded, you guys were the thing. So taking over the reins, I mean, there's been a lot of times in music history where this has happened, you know, like Cliff from Metallica passed away and Jason got the job. How did it feel? Was it a big responsibility? Did you kind of feel strange about it? Like, but you knew the guys so well, was it an easy transition?
Here's the thing. Like, when something like that happens, and like it just recently, Steve Soto died, you know?
Yeah.
And I was talking to Brad who finished their tour with him. And it's like, you want to quit. There's something in you that says we don't want to do this anymore. This is, you need to be done. You need to be finished. But also that doesn't seem right either. It seems right that you need to keep going on, you know, and by going on, you keep everything kind of alive, you know,
yeah.
And you keep everyone's memory alive. And so with Jason, I never felt like I was taking his, I've never felt like I was taking his place. And not to sound corny or cliche or anything, but his spirit of everything and his, involvement and importance. And it just permeates everything in the band, you know? So I've always kind of felt like a fifth member, you know, I've never tried to do, I've tried to honor him, you know, and I, you know, so it is kind of, when you think about the situation, it is an awkward situation, but I never really got too caught up in that because, I just feel like, you know, his presence, he's still with us and we're still honoring his memory. So I don't know. It's a hard thing to try to explain.
Oh, I understand, man. Was there any kind of backlash from fans? Cause I know anytime something like that happens, sometimes some of the more, you know, overzealous fans can be kind of pricks.
Yeah. I never, well, the internet wasn't going back then.
Yeah.
So I don't know what, you know, people said, but you know, the transit, see, it was kind of weird because I was kind of like in and out, and I was kind of there in the band while all this stuff was taking place. It wasn't like I was a replacement. It was like I was already there and we were playing together at the same time anyway. So I never got no one's ever said anything to me negative about, you know, being there. I mean, and also, you know, we made some of the most popular records together. You know, Unknown Road together. And then after, you know, Jason died, then we released Full Circle, which kind of was pretty strong for me also. Right around the About Time record, I had been talking to Jason. I've been talking to Fletcher, and Jason was, he wanted to get together and play and, like, you know, kind of have me help him out a little bit and give him some pointers on stuff. I don't know. We got together about four or five times and we might've gone over, the songs that they were doing and also just maybe some techniques for him to help him learn the stuff that I played on Unknown Road.
Yeah.
And, so I tried to help Jason. Like, I loved the band and I would have been super happy to have been in at any point in time, but I think I have this feeling in life that things happen the way they're supposed to. And I don't ever want anything that I feel I don't deserve. I'm really good at self-destructive if I want to. So I know that, like, nothing is that important to not do things the right way. Right.
Yeah.
So when I was working with Jason, I was showing him, you know, parts that we played and I really, really wanted him. I was like, you know, there's a part on, Homesick. So there's a part in the middle in the breakdown where I do a pretty fast lick. It's like, something like that. Right. And Jason was having a hard time with that. And also, Time to Burn. He was kind of having a hard time with that. So I was working with him and I really, really tried to get it so we could get him to get those parts and then go into practice and show everyone, hey, I got this, because he was a great guy, man. I really, he was a really, really likable guy. And I was happy just to try to help him. But I did tell him also around that time too, I was like, man, you got to get this stuff, because if you don't, and there's problems in the band, and if they do end up asking me to be in the band, I'm going to say yes. So obviously it's just an incredible bummer just the way it turned out, because he was such a great guy, but it's just kind of, I don't know, everything just played out the way it did, you know? And, and then here we are, but it's still a tragedy, because he, like I said before, he wrote those, he had a unique way of writing songs that made the band the same, but different, you know. It was that thing that just, it was that creative, really unique, part about the band. I think that he was really that creative. He had a gift, you know?
Yeah, definitely, man. Yeah. So I want to go ahead a little bit here. Straight Ahead came out in 99. And the one thing that was weird for me, you know, and my friends, because we were these little punk rock shitheads, in 1999, when Straight Ahead came out, Alien started getting quite a lot of radio play, and the video was on MTV. We actually went and saw you guys at our local, like, big festival called X Fest. It's a radio festival in Indianapolis. And we saw you guys, and then we left, because we were, you know, trying to be loyal to Pennywise. But how was that for you guys? It was a little bit different than before. It seemed like the mainstream was starting to take notice a little bit more. Was that kind of strange for you guys?
Well, yeah, it was. Okay, so Straight Ahead was an interesting record, because in my view, it's got some really, I think it would be an incredible record if it had maybe like five less songs on it. Now, I couldn't tell you which ones, I mean, but there's just a way to trim the fat on that. What we were also trying to do is be more inclusive with everyone's songs. So it was really hard to pick, because they're all good,
yeah,
you know, but, or in our opinion, they're all good, but it's hard to, but everyone, you know, wanted to have more input. Right. So that album, you know, when you bring that up, it's kind of, you know, long, and kind of like there's different type of stuff on there. But what that did do, because there was so much different material, was opened up the door for a song like Alien. So when we heard Alien, that was a song that Jim had written, and he had done a little demo of it at his house. When we heard it, we thought, and up to that point, hadn't done anything like that. We thought, wow, this really isn't a Pennywise style song, but this is a really good song. Like we all recognized and really liked it a lot. And we just thought, well, it doesn't matter if it's a Pennywise style, it has to go on the record. So that's because we just liked it that much. So that's what happened. So we got it on the record, and then I don't know how the radio stuff came into play, but I think, you know, maybe someone at Epitaph had recognized that it had potential to be on the radio, and then they kind of pushed it that way, and then it got, people wanted to play it. K-Rock wanted to play it. And so then we did do those radio shows.
Were those radio shows really weird next to the shows you guys were used to playing?
Yeah, they were weird. They were weird. But here's my take on all this stuff. You could call it quote unquote selling out, or you could call it whatever you want, like kind of stepping out of your box. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody ever got in a band and got a gig so that they could limit the amount of people that come to the show, right?
Totally.
You agree to go play a show. You say, no, I don't want 300 people there. I only want 175, and that's it. You know, close the door.
Yeah.
So it's kind of silly. I kind of feel like, you know, there was a time back in the early 80s when punk rock first started, there were bands that changed their style in order to try to get on the radio and try to get success. But come 1999... you didn't really have to try to change your style. You didn't have to do anything because punk rock's on the radio. So the whole term of selling out didn't make any sense, because no one, you didn't have to try to do anything different. You could just be who you are. You could be Pennywise with Fletcher throwing up on Dr. Drew and still get played on the radio.
I forgot all about that, man. I'm glad you brought that up.
So I've never felt bad about, the only thing I've ever felt bad about is doing things that don't ring true, you know, in your heart or whatever. So if it rings true and people are liking it and you have opportunities to go do more stuff, then I say, go for it. I mean, look, coming up, when I was playing in bands and I would get a chance to play with someone who I, had respect for, like Jack Grisham, and I was playing in Tender Fury. He already did the punk rock thing in TSOL. He wanted to do something different. Now me, I loved TSOL. I wanted to do TSOL, but he wanted to do Tender Fury and it was a little more rock. So I did that because I enjoyed playing with Jack, but we played in these fucking, Hollywood, clubs like Coconut Teaser. Like back then, dude, they had Coconut Teaser, English Acid, Exposure 54. They had so many different clubs that you would go and they'd have a backline. You play for 15 minutes and you bail. So I would half those clubs. There's every single rock band, every single hair metal band, everything at that time, because it was the early 80s, before it was not early 80s, late 80s, early 90s, pre Nirvana. There was a lot of that. And so we would go play in front of a crowd, like 11 dudes that all had their arms folded, like just shaking their head going like, I could do that. You know, like, dude, I've played in front of the worst crowds ever and the best, even before the band, like our band, The Falling Idols, like that was a party band. Like people loved us and it was so much fun. And these were all our friends, you know? So I've had the best and the worst.
Yeah.
So I don't say no. In the 80s, I was homeless for a minute. I was homeless because I didn't want to do anything. And I was a total fuck up. And I was, you know, doing things I shouldn't do. And I was lazy. So when I got my shit together and I got back, you know, living life, right?
Yeah.
Doing things. I don't say no. So if there's a radio gig, yeah. Yeah, that's weird. It doesn't, but I'm not going to say no. I'm going to just go do it because you got to do the work. You got to man up and do the work. So the people that have a problem with that, I'm just like, well, good. In my opinion, like, I know not everyone feels like this, but to me, I'm like, good, have a problem and see you later.
I feel like you guys putting a song like Alien on that record and then you guys doing some of that stuff, like playing radio festivals, that's punk rock to me. You guys aren't just being what everybody else is being. You're trying new things. You're being punk rock in doing that. That's my opinion.
Well, I'll say what you're saying about that, I agree with 100%. Like I'm not saying necessarily, I'm not taking credit for us being punk rock doing that. I don't even know what we were doing, really. I mean, I guess what you're saying, because when you feel like you, like something that you have a decision to make and you want to do something and you sit in your head and you go, I'm going to make the decision that I think will make people happy, even though my heart's telling me to do something else. That's not punk rock.
Yeah.
That's conforming, you know, and that is everything that punk rock was ever against. Like, you know, me going like, well, hey, I guess I'm going to cut my hair off and girls are never going to like me back in, you know, in between 10th and 11th grade. That was punk rock, yeah. You know, because I was being real to myself. So, yeah. And I live by that. And I try to explain that to people. A lot of people are confused and they think punk rock is a thing. It's a uniform. It's a certain way of thinking. It's a conformity. It's a political ideal. People are, in my opinion, very confused about what's punk rock nowadays. But, yeah, so I'll take that. I'll take what you're saying. Yeah. We were just like, hey, we're going to go do this. And I know personally, like, I don't put a lot of stake into what people think about something that I do if I'm very, very confident that that's the thing I want to do, you know?
And I think that's the best way to be, especially in a band where you have all these people that are, you know, into your band. Do what makes you happy. I mean, if you try to conform to make the fans happy, that's the first step in losing all of your fans, I think.
Bro, dude, exactly, because it's a fine line. If they can sense your wishy-washy, like, what makes one band more popular than the other? It's weird. It's really weird. There's very, very subtle things happening when, because you can't explain it, right? So if they get a whiff of you being wishy-washy or not being true, because that's what art is, right? So music is art. It's just an expression. You got to be true to expressing yourself, and you do it uniquely, and in the way you do it, that's what people like. So if you lose that and you start aping yourself, which I see, you know, and this is something I have a problem with too. Like, it's a fine line, because you, there, on one hand, like for me, let's use TSOL as an example. I loved TSOL's first couple albums, and then they started, you know, following their art, you know, their art and their expression, and they started changing a bit. And then I didn't really like it as much.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said as your fans, when they start buying your music and liking you, you all kind of enter into like an unspoken contract, kind of like, because you're making them happy, and you kind of, they're expressing their individuality through you. Like, if you go get a Pennywise tattoo, you don't want Pennywise to put out a, you know, a reggae album, right? Because now that's not so it's really hard for us. Like, we have to, you know, so I know people say, like, you put out the same album over and over, which would stand in contrast to what I'm saying about, hey, you have to express yourself artistically and blah, blah, blah. So what we try to do is, there are certain boundaries. There's boundaries with everything. There's, you know, you drive down the street, you got to stop at red lights, right? So we want to consider what people who love Pennywise want to hear.
Yeah, I get that.
And within that, we want to stretch the boundaries a little bit to try to make ourselves happy again, because we can't write, you know, Unknown Road over and over again. So, you know, and really be happy. So we find little things that we could do in there to keep ourselves feeling fresh about it, you know, and then still keeping it so people are getting what they expect. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, I'm a father, and the other F word, that documentary that kind of, you know, rotated around Jim and when he was leaving the band and stuff like that. He left in 2010. You guys got Zoli from Ignite to take over, and then you recorded All or Nothing. Now, I own that record. I like that record, but I feel like you guys don't really talk about it much. It is now that Jim's back in the band, is that just something that you guys kind of just, you know, swept under the rug, or is that still something you guys really enjoy?
It's a really, you know, see, there again, I mean, this band is full of, it's never a dull moment, you know, it's like as the wise turns, right?
Yeah.
Look, Jim is the singer of Pennywise. I mean, he's the guy. And when people first heard the first Pennywise record, it's Jim's voice. It's Jim singing. He's a great lyricist. He's great, got a great voice, great melodies. I mean, he's the guy. So as you know, but you know, as things move ahead and time goes on, you know, different things happen in people's lives, you know, and sometimes you got to take a different turn, and you got to try new things. So everything kind of, and we're like, we're together so much, like we're like brothers that, you know, that fight all the time, but then, and then sometimes, and then get along all the time, and then, or, you know, love each other, love, hate, all this stuff, you know? Yeah. So as things just naturally progress, it just ended up that Jim wanted to take a different route. We weren't ready to be done. Like I said earlier, you know, it's just like, if anyone has to leave for any reason, we weren't ready to be done, and we wanted to continue on. I'll say about that record, All or Nothing, I think, you know, if it was called a different band name, I don't think anyone would have anything bad to say about it, because,
well, I draw the parallel with the Descendants and All. Those All records are amazing, but because Milo's not singing on it, some people maybe don't dig it. So, I mean, I kind of feel that is the same thing with this record. It's an amazing record, but Jim's not on it.
Thank you. Yeah. So there was reasons we had for continuing on as Pennywise. And I mean, Fletcher basically, I mean, he's been there since day one, you know, and he, you know, so there was just, there was reasons why we felt like we wanted to continue on as Pennywise. And so I love the way that record turned out. I'm very happy with it. And it was a fun, there was a lot of, it was a hard period of time, but it was a lot of fun also. And so I'm proud of it, but you know, when Jim came back and we got everything back together, it just seems like this is the path that we, you know, this last record we put out, that should have been the record we put out when we put out All or Nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
So I don't take anything away from All or Nothing, but I just think it's something like we've always wanted the band to be the core of people that have made it what it was and what it is. So it just, you know, if people like that record, that's awesome. I'm proud of it. And had a lot to do with the writing on it with Fletcher, and I'm really proud of it. But I just feel that like there's no reason to really, we don't need to go there. I mean, geez, if we have like 9 or 10 albums without that one.
I was going to ask you what's the process for like a set list? Cause that's gotta be just insane with that many records.
Yeah. It's hard. You know, there's songs that you're going to hear every time when you come see a Pennywise show. And there's ones that just seem to go over well. They get the crowd going. Cause you want to have an atmosphere at the show. You want to have an atmosphere in the club. You want to have everyone be buzzing and have it like be happening, you know? So there's songs that do that we've found over the years that we love playing. And so we have our favorites. We have ones that we perform better than others. And we have the ones that the crowd likes more than others. So we just try to, you know, there's probably, if I say 50 songs that we choose from, it might be too much, but I would say over the years, it's probably like a collection of like 50 songs that we will choose from, you know. Some of them are just deep cuts, and they're just going to be deep cuts, you know?
Yeah, definitely, man. So, you know, Jim's back, everything's going well. You guys have put out a lot of records, you know. Never Gonna Die, the new record that came out this year, it was produced by Cameron Webb. You guys have used him quite a bit. I know he's a friend of the band. How was that experience recording with the new record with him?
Yeah, Cameron's great. So I'll tie this in with what I said before. Like, so to have Jim, you know, to have the band back together the way it had always been intended, and to have Jim back, like with this record of our own, of newer material, because we had already put the other one out that was like older stuff, yeah. But this record, Never Gonna Die, with all the newer material, we really felt like we wanted to make that record that was supposed to be next in succession, and really, you know, we were feeling good about having the band back together again. So, Cameron, yeah, we've done these, done three albums with Cameron, or actually two with Jim, and Cameron's great. Cameron is he gets so much done while you know, like he's a great producer, great engineer. He gets so much done, gets work done when you don't even realize it. Like he's sitting there typing away or punching away and doing stuff, and you don't even realize what he's doing. He's already working on mixing the album almost, or editing when we're, before you're even done, you know? So, and he creates a really good atmosphere where we all work, we flow really good and we work easily, and he's able to, keep everything organized. And he's really good, and he's got a great ear, and he's very capable, and actually he's just top notch when it comes to mixing and engineering. So we're really always super stoked to work with him, and we felt good about the material we got. You know, I mean, Jim came back with a vengeance and wrote some great lyrics and melodies, and you know, you get Fletcher's guitar playing in there, and it's just, I mean, if you're a Pennywise fan, then you I don't see any reason to not like this album.
So what's the hours like for recording? I know a lot of you guys have families and whatnot. Like, you guys go in for 2 or 3 months straight and you're there all day, or do you guys work like a 9 to 5 at the studio? Do you work at night? What was it like when you guys were doing the record?
Yeah, we kind of 9 to 5 it. It works for Cameron also, cause he has a family, and you know, you think about it, how long can you, there's only a certain amount of time that you're really productive. Back in the day, bands that I was in, and even with Pennywise, you would go to rehearsal every day and you practice your songs and you get them down and you just really beat them out to where they're, you know, you get rid of all the rough spots, and then you go in and record as fast as you can in the studio because it costs money. So you get all your recording, everything done within, like, you know, maybe one day, maybe 4 days, you know.
Yeah.
But now we have the ability. Cameron's got, he's really flexible with working during the days. And plus, like you said, we have kids. So it just works for us to, like, get the songs pretty much down in a rough sketch. And we use recordings a lot. So we go in and we'll record during the day, and then we take it home, we listen to it. And that's how we figure out what changes we want to make. And that's what's different than before. You would go into to rehearse and you would play the song, and then you'd sit there and all talk about it. Like, why don't we change this part? Why don't we change that? And so nowadays, as we've kind of switched, so we could take home a CD and then listen to it. And then the next time we get together, we have all the ideas that we want to try. So we don't have to spend as much time rehearsing. And then when we get in the studio, since we're doing days and we know we still have to hash things out, it takes a while. It takes about, I would say, we're in the studio working, you know, doing from drums to basic tracks to everything. It probably takes about a month of doing 9 to 5, you know, but, you know, it keeps you productive because, you know, you're not there at 2 o'clock in the morning doing a crappy solo that you have to erase the next day or something.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Okay. So this podcast is called That One Time on Tour. So I do want to talk a little bit about touring. I see that you guys are doing some South America dates at the end of the year. I love South America, Brazil, Argentina, the whole nine yards. Do you have a favorite country that you've toured in? And if so, do you have maybe like a little story you could tell about it?
It's funny because when I looked at your, when I looked and see what the podcast was about, I was like, oh, we're going to talk about tour stories, right?
Well, we do, so, but I like to cover everything as well.
So I'll tell you, so then I wrote a list because when people ask me this question, yeah, I just blank. Because most every story that's worth telling about tour involves Fletcher. The dude is just,
I want to hear some Fletcher stories, really, really bad.
I know. The guy's a maniac. So, okay, let me read you this list okay, well, first to answer your question, we really have a good time when we go to Australia.
Okay.
So that's one of the funnest, that's one of our favorite countries to tour, but they're all good. Europe is like, is weird. You feel like you just got off like a ride at the fair the whole time.
I understand what you're saying. I don't know if anybody out there does, but I understand.
Right. And then South America is really cool because that just, man, the passion that goes on down there and the food, and then it's dangerous, you know, kind of dangerous.
It's kind of sketchy when you're down there, but that adds to it. It always makes you feel really, it's like the old days, you know?
Right. And then, like, I've been known to, like, you know, partial story, like to drink. So I haven't been drinking for like over a year now, right?
Just, yeah.
It's good to take a break. And, but I would like to drink a lot on tour. I mean, it really makes it easy. I mean, if everyone's going to be drinking, Fletcher's going to be drinking, it's just better. If you're going to hang out with them, you might as well be drunk. It's like taking Novocaine for going to see the dentist. Like, if not, it's really, it's kind of painful. I mean, it's funny as shit, and the stories he tells are great. And if you had a video of it, it'd be funny. But when you're there, like, you know, and it's kind of painful. But but one of the things I like to do when I'm drinking on tours, go walk it off at the end of the night.
Okay.
So some of the stuff, funny stuff has been around me walking it off. Like, even in Sao Paulo?
Sao Paulo, yeah.
Yeah, dude. I mean, that place is pretty sketchy.
That place is sketchy all over, yeah.
Yeah, so then me thinking that I'm just drunk and I'm going to go walk around Sao Paulo and not care, because when I get drunk, I think I'm tough, and I grew up in Long Beach, and I know I'm not tough, but I really think, you know, but I'm not a little guy. I'm like, you know, 6'1 or 2 and kind of, you know, 200 pounds, you know, so I like, I guess I'm kind of, but I'm not really tough. I guess I could, but if I get drunk, I think I'm tough, and I don't go get in fights, and I'm always trying to be respectful to people, but I get, have less fear. So I'll just go where I want. I do what I want. And so, yeah, you know, walking around Sao Paulo drunk, and not realizing that Fletcher was, shadowing me the whole time from a block back to make sure that I was all right. And then, but let me read. Okay. So that's just a little thing. I don't actually know why I even said that, but I'll tell you this little list of stories that I came up with. You could pick one.
Oh, I want. Okay. I'll pick one. Yeah. That's a good idea. So tell me the titles, I guess, and I'll pick one.
Okay. So one is the Gooby Gone on Warped. And then the fight with a band on Warped, norovirus in Europe, where everyone got sick, broken bass in Spain, almost bus crash in Argentina, bathroom break in Argentina. We don't need to sell that one. dancing on the bus to that NoFX song, Why Must We Stay? Or shirts off paper towel dance on Dexter's bus in the U.S., first night back drinking in the early 90s with Fletcher, and with ending in a car crash.
Wow.
Falling down on stage a Warped Tour and getting kicked by Fletcher. Last lost in New York out on the Offspring Tour. Canada border. New Orleans escaping the bus for a walk in the ghetto. Yeah, that was me wanting to go for a walk and surfing yesterday. So there you go.
Okay, so here's the one that I'm going to choose, but we're definitely going to have you back for a part two because I need to hear the other ones. The one that I want to talk about, because I think I remember part of this, because I think I may have been on Warped when it happened, the fight, the Warped Tour fight.
Okay, all right. All right, so that, I'll say first off that I feel bad about it because we were in the wrong.
Okay.
Okay. But that said, I think that I don't know. It's maybe I shouldn't say, but I think the reaction was their reaction was kind of crazy. But then again, maybe it wasn't. Now think about it. Okay. So what happened that night? It was in, I think, 2012. We were in Denver, on Warped, and there's a restaurant. So that area there's like little bars across the street from the parking lot where all the buses are. And Fletcher was in there like wasted, out of his mind. And we were all partying. Everyone was partying, but he was on one. And I guess he was in the bathroom. And one of the things about Fletcher is if you make it, give a challenge to him, like he will accept any challenge almost, because he wants to win. He likes to win everything. So something went on in the bathroom when I wasn't there about the, you know, the towel dispenser on the wall. And yeah. I don't know if someone dared, if he could knock it off, but something happened and he punched the towel dispenser. He just started thrashing stuff and everyone bailed. Right. So he's going nuts. And I kind of felt like the dog whisperer, you know, with Fletcher sometimes, like he'll listen to me and I'll hang out with him and I'll try to make everything okay.
Yeah.
So I get him. I think I helped get him out of the bar, because I think the bar manager was freaking out. Fletcher might even, you know, paid for the thing. He always fixes the stuff he breaks or pays for it. He's good about that. So we're walking and we're trying to get back to the bus and, we're, you know, but it's taking a long time and I'm trying to coax him, you know, but I'm super wasted also. And, there was, the Reverend, who was the guy that was on the tour? They were great. They were kind of like
the big damn band or whatever.
Yeah. It was kind of like a hillbilly band. The Reverend, I'll think of it after the podcast is over. Right.
Yeah.
it was popping my head anyway. So we were super stoked on them. We were walking back through the parking lot, and they had one of those camper, instead of a tour bus, they had a camper. And So we thought we found the Reverend's camper, and we had hung out with them a few times. We were knocking on the door. We were going to go in and say hi to them. So it ends up, it wasn't their camper. It was this other band's camper. I don't even know if I want to say the name.
Oh, come on, man. You got to tell us who the band is.
Okay. Well, it was Alisana.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Right. And I had even talked to those guys earlier. I was like, you know, I like to be cool with everyone. Whatever happened that night, well, I'll tell you how it went. So we go on the bus, on the van, on the camper, whatever the hell it was, and no one's on there. And we're like, oh, well, we'll just wait for them to get back or something. Cause we were drunk.
Yeah.
And I sit down and I'm like, I don't think this isn't theirs. And he's like, oh, well, fuck it. I'm making a sandwich. Right. So we're on their camper. So we're not on the right camper. We're on Alisana. We didn't know that though. So,
and Fletcher's making a sandwich in their camper.
He's going through he's rifling through the cupboards looking for the stuff, you know, bread, and he's got bread in his hands. I think he's looking for stuff.
Yeah.
And then some guy comes on. It might've been their manager. I don't know, but they had a crew with them. They had, you know, they're not, you know, I guess they're like an emo band, but, or something. I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely not talking shit because I it was wrong. We were in the wrong.
Yeah.
But they had a crew with them. And so the next thing I know, the guy's on here saying, get the fuck off our trailer. And Fletcher's like, I'm going to make a sandwich first. Right. Because he doesn't like being told what to do. And it starts turning into a thing. And I'm sitting there kind of laughing because when you hang out with Fletcher, everything goes because he gets away with everything. He's a huge man. He's super, he's quick witted. He's really sharp.
It's like,
you know,
the Fletcher umbrella is above you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You feel a little bit like, you know, more invincible when you're hanging out with him. So the next thing it's like, nah, I'm just going to sit here and make a sandwich and then I'll go when I want. And cause the guy was kind of being, he was all bent out of shape that we were on the camper. Yeah. So, but you know, rightly so, but also Fletcher deals with a lot of people where he's in the wrong place and people don't always act like that. They don't always get super bent out of shape.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like an overreaction, we thought. And so I'm sitting there laughing about it. And then the next thing you know, where I'm sitting, I'm surrounded by like five dudes and, five, maybe even six. And, Fletcher's over there with the other guy, and I could see out of the corner of my eye something I never expected to happen. This guy starts attacking Fletcher. He just starts trying to hit him. So Jeez. Fletcher's over there, and at the same, so then in my head, I'm like, whoa, it doesn't go here. And I play around, I mess around, I rarely get violent, rarely, but only when it's like that situation where it's like, you have no choice. It's on. It's just like, a green light went on. I got attacked. They had me in a head fold and a head hold. Headlock.
Yeah.
And somehow I like yoga'd my way out of the headlock and I just started swinging and I just started. And me and Fletcher were back to back. He's fighting. Like, I don't even know what's going on over there, who he's fighting, but I'm just tagging dudes like I didn't, you know, like it was slow motion. I was like, bah, 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 just like straight arm hitting guys because to keep them away from me mostly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they didn't, and they jumped on me, you know, and put me in a headlock, you know, like they pretty much, I was in the wrong. Me and Fletcher were completely in the wrong, but they attacked me, you know, and they attacked him. So, which it's within their rights, but I just really felt the need to defend myself. So yeah, I just hit as many dudes as I could and Fletcher was fighting. And then it felt like it was in slow motion.
This was all in the camper too, right?
Yeah. In the camper. And,
did it spill out of the camper at some point?
Yeah, it kind of was. Guys were, spilling into the camper. See, you know, cause it was like, there was seriously, I don't know, anywhere from 5 to 9 guys on there. And then me and Fletcher. And one funny thing was like, while we're doing this and everything's in slow motion, I'm back to back with Fletcher and we're fighting. And I was laughing because I'm like, I can't, this is funny. Like me and Fletcher are like, you know, you know, like a fucking brawl right now, back to back fighting these guys. So, but you know what? And so then it just, and then it calmed down, then it stopped. And then like the cops showed up and they tased Fletcher.
They tased him for real?
Yeah, they tased him.
Jeez.
They tased him. That, you know, so, I mean, I keep, you know, I mean, there's more to the story. I kind of feel bad though. Cause like I said, I'll fucking say it again. It was our fault. We were in the wrong. They're nice guys. So I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, but this, it's just the thing that happened. So we had to fight them. And then Fletcher got tased by the cops and I got put in the back of a cop car for like 45 minutes. Fletcher got taken to jail. I was yelling at Fletcher in the cop car. I'm like, get me out of here. And like Fletcher said something to the cops and they let me go. He's like, Fletcher said. So then they let me go. And then so Fletcher goes to jail. I went back to the bus and I kept, and they were like, if we see this guy again, then he's going to jail too. So, my crew wouldn't let me leave. I wanted to go back and like, I gotta save Fletcher, just fucking out of my mind. Stupid. and so then they're all trying to hold me down. And I got four or five guys piled on me holding each limb, you know, like one guy's holding my leg, one guy's holding my arm. And I'm completely going retarded at that point.
Yeah.
And then ended up one of the guys, Taco, he did like a rugby tackle on me on my knee and just boom, my knee went. And, so my knee is, you know, was just screwed up for like 5 weeks after that. We had another gig the next day somewhere at a festival and Fletcher's in jail. We couldn't play that. So yeah, we ended up, you know, We got our instant karma for doing that, but it was actually a lot of fun.
Did Kevin reprimand you guys at all?
Yeah, I think Kevin was really mad. I think it was the last show on the tour, though.
Okay,
so that's why we were going to some other show. So it was I think it was a radio show. So that was the last show on the tour. And Kevin knows what he's getting into when he's dealing with Fletcher, but you know, right. That's the thing. You can't get in fights. Like that's just a big no-no. Right.
Yeah. So I just remember, one of the first Warped Tours that I was ever a part of, I think I'm wanting to say it's 99, 98, maybe, I'm not sure when it was, but it was, Dropkick Murphy's got in a fight with Lit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know what happened or like if they were reprimanded, but it was like in the parking lot going back to the buses, like someone from Lit said something to someone in Dropkick or Dropkick said something to them and they ended up getting in a fight. And I don't know the logistics of it. And please, you know, listeners out there, I don't know anything about this. I was just on the tour at the time. So yeah, it just kind of reminds me of that. I know Kevin doesn't want anybody to fight, but sometimes you get personalities, alcohol gets involved and it happens, you know?
Yeah. I wouldn't want to fight the Dropkick crew.
No, thank you.
Yeah. But you know, you never know. And that's the thing about fighting is like, you never know. It's like anyone could get dropped, with a good punch. You don't know what's going to happen. If you end up, you know, hitting the guy and they, you know, they could fall and hit their head and that'd be the last time you ever see him. And then there you are spending the rest of your life in jail or prison. And then, or you could get hit and get hurt. I mean, it's like really, it's kind of like there's very few times where it's justified. You know, if it's just about ego, I know it's hard, man. I've walked away a lot, you know, times because I'm always thinking, you know, I always think like, what are the, you know, my dad taught me to think ahead, you know?
Yeah.
And, I played baseball when I was very young. I didn't get to keep playing. But one of the things about baseball is like, you always have to run scenarios in your head. You have to know that if the guy hits it over there and there's a man on base, then what are you going to do with it if you get the ball? Or what if it's hit over here? You have to think about eight different scenarios. It's almost like chess. I'm not a big sports fan or anything, but I don't think baseball gets enough credit. You got to be kind of smart, you know, you got to think ahead. So those things stick with me, you know, and I always think when there's a scenario happening, it's like, man, just to like maintain your level of cool or whatever, because some guy might have like, you know, said the wrong thing or whatever. It's kind of a bad reason to fight, but guys do it all the time. But you know, it's not a good thing.
Not a good thing at all, man.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you're going to totally have to, you know, at some point in the future, come back and tell some of those other stories. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Well, hey, man, I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast today. The last thing I want to ask you, I know I said you guys, I saw your dates in South America for the end of the year. What's next for Pennywise? What's on the agenda as far as 2019?
Okay. Yeah. Well, we have a few shows. We got Vegas coming up next weekend. We got a show in Huntington Beach coming up on October 27th called Surf City Blitz with Suicidal Tendency, Social Distortion, Rancid, us. I think the Offspring, bunch of bands. That's rad. And then, like you said, South America. And then 2019, we just plan on, we're trying to put together a touring schedule now, and we just want to keep touring and keep playing. We got playing, touring on, Never Gonna Die, because since we just put that out this year. So basically just tour, and then you know, just keep doing it as long as we can, and keep getting, you know, people to show up, and hopefully everyone's having a good time. And that's it right there. All right, Chris, great talking to you. Thanks a lot for asking me to do this. It was nice. Yep. So
I'll have you back for a part two, because I got to hear some of those other stories.
All right, great.
I'll talk to you later, man. Thanks a lot, Randy. Have a good one.
Okay. Okay, bye.
Bye. So there it was, my conversation with Mr. Randy Bradbury from Pennywise. I had a great time talking to Randy. That the stories that he has are really, really good. I wouldn't suggest anybody go walking around drunk by yourself in Sao Paulo, Brazil. But it looks like Randy had the Fletcher umbrella to protect him. So thanks a lot to Randy for coming on the show. I know we're going to have him back in the future for a part two. I said that all the time, but I'm definitely going to have Randy back because I want to hear about those other stories. So yeah, I feel like shit and I'm going to go to sleep. So the one thing that I need to tell you guys is if you're in Muncie, Indiana, and you need guitar strings or anything else musical, you need to go to Muncie Music Center. It is a really good store. I teach guitar, ukulele, mandolin, banjo, bass, and a lot of other stuff there. So if you need lessons, hit me up. If you need anything else, go to 600 South Mulberry Street and check them out in person, or you can hit them up on the web at MuncieMusic.com. Okay, I'm super tired, so I'm going to get out of here, but I have a little bit of cool news. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and one of my favorite podcasts is a podcast called Speak and Destroy. It is a guy that I know from here in Indiana, but now he lives out in LA. Ryan J. Downey hosts it, and it is about Metallica. It's a podcast all about Metallica. Well, I'm going to be a guest on his podcast, and he is going to be a guest on my podcast. He used to be in a really cool band called Burn It Down, and yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. That's coming up this Sunday. So if you have any questions that you want me to ask Ryan about his band or Metallica or anything else, let me know. But I'm really excited for the crossover episode of Speak and Destroy and TOTOT. So thank you guys so much for all the support. I would like to wish my little baby daughter, Indy, happy birthday. She turns 1 year old on Friday. So all you guys out there in podcast land, you should leave me some comments and tell Indy happy birthday. We're really, really excited that she's going to be 1 year old, and we're going to get the smash cake, and she's going to get all crazy covered in cake and stuff. It's going to be great. So that's it for me this week. I'm going to leave you with a couple Pennywise songs. First thing I'm going to leave you with is title track off their new record, Never Going to Die or Never Gonna Die. And after that, if you don't know this song, I don't know what's wrong with you. I'm going to play Bro Him, but it's the tribute version that they did on Full Circle back in 1997. So thank you guys very much. I appreciate all the support. I am very under the weather and I need to go to sleep. So I will see you next week with my guest will be Mr. Pete Parada from The Offspring. So if you guys want me to ask him any certain questions, you're out of luck because I've already done the interview. But please come back next week and check out Pete from The Offspring on That One Time on Tour. See you guys later. Out of
friends, present, past, and beyond. To all those who weren't with us too long, life's the most precious thing you can do.
While you were here, the fun was never ending. Laughing made it was all I needed. Jason, my brother, this one for you.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget, and we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week, so pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.